and Matt. We're an interracial couple with two kids wanting to do something that highlights the power of friendship and what it means to be in the company of true friends. We're going to move our society away and out of the loneliness epidemic and into a friendlier, happier world. Welcome to Our Friendly World. Better, stronger, together.
Okay, everybody, we are recording. Good morning.
Hello.
Good evening. Hi there. Hi. We have a super friend with us today, everybody. Special treat. We have a very special guest for you. We actually became friends during the pandemic. Go figure, through Zoom. It was another love at first sight kind of situation. Everybody, please meet our friend, Pamela Stokes. Yay!
Yay! Thanks for having me, guys.
It's such a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for being with us today.
I'm excited.
I wanted to tell our friends a little bit about you, and then you can jump in, please, and tell us more. There are so many things that attracted me to you. Your beautiful mind and your beautiful scientific mind totally intrigues me. I know that you work with the science of brain and body. You're the creator and founder of Move Into Resilience. You have your own podcast, Move Into Resilience. There's so much I want to talk to you about. Matt is here too. Hello. Did you say hi?
I did say hi. I am here.
Hi, Matt.
I will try and get a word in edgewise today.
So I'll try to be better. You know, as I'm editing all these episodes, I'm realizing what a bulldozer I am with the conversations. I'm trying to be better. I always talk about Joe Dispenza. Pamela is her own deal. She's the real deal. If you were to describe what she does out in the world, I would describe her as the female version of Joe Dispenza. Dr.
Right
Joe
on.
Dispenza.
I'll take that. Thank you.
So, nugget of wisdom. Pamela, I'm going to talk about Santa Monica for a little bit. We
sure.
always start with a nugget of wisdom from Santa Monica. I was heartbroken. And
not there, folks.
No, Matt was not the reason. I was engaged to this ridiculous person. Guy.
Hi.
He was. Anyway, heartbroken and the neighborhood. Of course, I always talk about this neighborhood, our little utopia. We all stuck together. We all helped each other. We all supported each other. And you all know the building that housed all this amazing, all these amazing groups of friendships. We were all pretty much in one building, but it was also, it covered a huge, many blocks long radius in Santa Monica. We were all friends, all family. And one of my friends was like, enough with the crying, Vaughn. Come on, come with me. So, you know, I'm not a big drinker at all. I'm a total lightweight. Oh, lightweight, big time. I can't. One sip and I'm done. Thank you.
I hear you on that. Yeah, same.
And plus, I don't like alcohol. It's like poison to me. I don't know.
Mm. Well, it is actually.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but even with that though, here's what happened. My friend who loved drinking, we were friends not only with one another, we were also friends with all the neighborhood shops and the businesses. It was one big family. O'Brien's pub was right across the street from us. My friend Kia took matters into her own hands and went to the manager of O'Brien's. And everybody knew what was going on. Everybody knew Fawn's upset, you know, the breakup. And I just didn't want to talk to anybody. I was always crying. I was really pissed off, angry. Anyway, so she and the manager of O'Brien's opened up O'Brien's just for me. There was nobody else in there. And here I was sitting at the bar with Kia and our O'Brien's friend, with music, shot glasses, and the bar. All those things, minus the alcohol, just hearing certain music, having a friend hold your hand, sitting at a bar and just having that support, like leaning on a tree, having the manager of O'Brien's, but having the bartender listen to you. It all was pretty much this neighborhood. That particular second, it involved alcohol, which, by the way, I ended up expelling as soon as I left.
Ew.
It was, I just, but it was a healing moment, and it involved such nourishment in a way, aside from the alcohol. Mm-hmm. It involved someone holding my hand, someone listening. We were all listening to music.
And also, O'Brien's Pub was a very comfortable space. It wasn't a bar with funky disco music and
right.
the spinning ball, et cetera, et cetera.
And we had the whole place to ourselves. So the lighting was calm and soothing. Not too dark, but it was dark. It was just nice. I don't know what nugget of wisdom that is. It just came to my mind. But nugget of wisdom, O'Brien's Pub, Kia, and a healing heart.
Yeah.
Which leads me to today's episode, which is called Full Capacity, Living in Survival Mode. It's going to sound like I'm always on the verge of collapse, like some trauma. I'm really not that way. But there was a moment in time where we experienced trauma, you and I, Matt.
Yes.
And I was literally just beside myself. I couldn't, you know, we had... The girls were little and so much had happened. It was the most traumatic of traumas. And I couldn't, I don't know. It was hard to function normally. And I was trained in spiritual response therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are therapists around the world that do that. I called one of the therapists asking for her help. And then she said something. Because what happened was, not only did I experience trauma, but the trauma was magnified by the fact that people that I thought were my greatest friends suddenly disappeared. As soon as they heard about the trauma, we never heard from them again. To this day, they don't know if Matt is alive. They don't know. Mm. They don't. They just disappeared off the face of the planet.
And that's hard.
It is. So not only was I dealing with what happened, now I had another thing on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And feeling alone and feeling confused and hurt and betrayed on top of the trauma.
Mm.
And so when I was talking to my friend, who's a therapist, on the phone, she was talking to me, but when you're going through trauma, it's like your hearing gets shut off. You can't hear normally. Or that's been my experience, Pamela. I don't know if other people...
It's actually physiological, yeah.
And so I couldn't hear. I cannot hear. I remember her saying that about these friends. She said, people can't be the friends you need them to be. They can't be the friend that you want them to be.
Mm-hmm.
So she was saying something like that. I don't remember her exact words, but what I heard her say was... I am just a gluttonous, demanding person who is a vampire and wants people to be there for her, and they're just not going to do that. I just felt like I was a terrible person. This is why they left. I'm just demanding too much. And so this went on, and it was around that same time that I decided to really study Joe Dispenza, Dr. Joe Dispenza. And things were so bad that we actually worked it out and put our money together for me to leave the family for a week, which I had never done. I've never left the kids. But I went away and went to a Dr. Joe Dispenza workshop, and he was talking about living in survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
And between what my therapist friend said and what I was understanding from Joe was, when we are in survival mode, it's actually being in a selfish mode. It's fight or flight situation?
Sure, yeah. Fight, flight, freeze. And then there's another one called shutdown.
Right.
A collapse.
Mm-hmm. So when there's a tiger, you pull in, you're there, you're running for your life. You are in survival mode. You don't have the capacity to tend to anything else or anyone else. Everything shuts down in your system and you're there to run and protect your life. And when he was talking about situations like this, about what happens with the brain, what happens to your body, what happens to your life, like, it's when your house is on fire, it's not a time to redecorate. When your house is on fire, you need to get out.
Definitely not.
It's running for your life. When I was listening to all this and I was remembering what happened with me and these people that I thought were friends, I started to look at the world from far away. I had perspective and I realized, oh my goodness, this is totally what's happening with the whole friendship thing that we're talking about. That as a society, even around the world, everybody is experiencing so much trauma that it sounds terrible to say everybody's selfish, but I truly understood what that meant. It's not like a person is selfish, they're a bad person. It's that they are there to take care of themselves. They can't physically be open to any other relationships. They can't be open to creating art. Like a long time ago, I was told, really be scared for society when art is not being produced. Because when there's no art, it means things are so bad that they don't even have the ability to express themselves. Yeah. Right? So look out for that. That's one of the warning signs, is look at the art in society. Since we are all experiencing trauma, and especially with this past, not only the pandemic, but all the issues have come up for everyone to discuss, like it or not, all the racial issues, the injustice of the economical states that people are in, all the injustices, all of them are now out in the open for everyone to really see, like it or not. It's not to be ignored anymore.
Right. We can't just dissociate from it anymore. You're right.
Exactly. So this is what I want to talk about. Since everybody's in pain and everybody needs to talk, I see us all as babies and everybody needs a diaper change. Everybody needs to eat. And we're all yelling and screaming and crying at the same time. It may be at different levels, but everybody's in pain. And since we're all in pain and we all need to speak, who gets to speak first? You know, I have had so much racism thrown at me, but I feel like I need to shut up right now and let my Black brothers and sisters speak. I'm not to say anything right now because their pain is greater than mine. You know, the way they are treated is far worse than the way I got treated. At the same time, I'm still crying over the way I got treated. How can we... So I have three questions for you, Pamela, and Matt. How can we be there for each other when we're all in pain? And then how to get outside of ourselves? How can we get to a point where we can actually come out of ourselves? Mm-hmm. And how do we get outside and back to social engagements after so much trauma? And also beyond the trauma, how do we come back together when the virus is under control? Because our muscle memory is to stay away from one another. How can we get past that? It's probably going to be extremely awkward if you hear a sneeze or a cough out there and everything's fine, but you still hear that. The muscle memory or the traumatic memory our brains are now sunken into thinking. Anyway.
Yeah. So really good introduction and excellent questions, Fawn. As far as who gets to go first, I can't say that there's a guideline for that. But one thing I do know is that some people are able to be okay during this time. And perhaps those are the ones that can kind of lead the way as far as knowing that there's another way to look at this. There's another perspective. I don't know if we can decide who gets to go first and who's got more pain or any of that kind of thing. But I think that what we can do certainly is to find people, the ones that have seen the positives of this, and maybe they can be somewhat of a guide for us, you know, to the light and to this place of safety. Because we are a social species, we're designed to feed off of each other's energy, and to see somebody smiling and someone's at ease, that helps us calm. And so perhaps by finding those people in your sphere who have the capacity, that can be a good place to start as far as getting this to the next step, which is out of survival mode, hopefully. And the question you had about when we come out of this pandemic, lockdown, shutdown, where people are now allowed to engage with each other, I'm actually seeing something happening recently, which I think it's exciting for me to see it, where we're not looking at each other's mouths because we're covered. So we're not reading that. We're reading eyes now. And when people are with you at the store, let's say, and you're engaging with them, you're actually the only connection that you do have is by this looking in the eyes. So perhaps this is a way that we can see there's a new way to do something. There's a new way to interact.
I totally agree. Like Zoom, mm-hmm. like how you and I became friends, because we have come to this evolution of realizing it's beyond the physical. There is a connection far beyond our bodies. And when I'm talking to a friend on the phone, when I'm looking at you on Zoom and we're speaking, I feel like we're completely together. Mm-hmm. Like we transcend space and time, all of that stuff. All the Star Wars-y, Star Trek-y stuff. Right, Matt?
Whereas where I come to it is, I'm able to maintain friendships via Zoom, but as far as forming new ones, forming those new attachments, it's proven to be very problematic, honestly, because the physical presence is such a comforting, nuancey thing.
Yeah, I hear you on that one too. Yeah, when we're in a physical space with a person, that's a different thing than seeing someone over the internet, for sure.
Right, right. And it's long been my kind of conjecture that friendships need shared experiences to grow. And you can share via Zoom, but it's a lot more complicated. I think it involves a different set of muscles than most people have. And I'm probably not very good at that.
Yeah. I think that too, there is, because of this fear, because of this underlying, we're all traumatized kind of situation, which is true, and the fear, I think that a lot of times being seen on video and in this capacity or this way of mm-hmm. doing Zoom feels vulnerable and feels confrontational to some
people.
Well,
also, and by the way, we're actually recording this call via Zoom. I'm actually staring right now, but it's also a lot more vulnerable maybe than I'm used to. So when I'm on my Zoom chats at work, I have a virtual background. I don't want people to, you know, there's mm-hmm. nothing really to see. It's just a window and a wall and whatever. Mm. But even just that, no, I put up a virtual background. I hide mm-hmm. that. So,
well, you have to hide that because I also don't want people to see my part of the desk.
Well, and we could sort our way around that, but it's on some level even more vulnerable with people I don't know like that. Mm-hmm. You know, people I have not invited into our home at this point.
Right, right. Yeah, that's caution. I mean, we're designed to find problems. That's how we're wired.
How cheery.
Yeah. But I have hope. We're wired to find problems because that's what keeps us safe, right? So if we know that that's an unsafe situation, we'll avoid it or we'll protect ourselves in some way. But given that we don't have these great predators around us right now, that it's kind of overboard. We've gone to the side of overly cautious. And so even something as simple as, I don't want them to see my background, you know, I don't want them to see my side of the desk, that is a protective mechanism, right? It's keeping us from revealing our true nature, our true selves. And so it's kind of part of that whole thing. And it's my hope and my mission is to be able to get to the place where it's okay. It's okay that people see me, the real me, and I don't have to put this mask on or I don't have to cover my background because we're all the same. And one thing I think the pandemic has done actually has made us more the same. We're all in this. No one person is immune and no one race or gender or whatever. It's the virus can get anyone, right?
I agree.
So by having that everyone's vulnerable feeling and knowing that we're all in this together can give a person some solace and some comfort in knowing, oh, this is actually happening to everyone. So what I was saying is that since we are wired to find problems, this was based on an environment that actually included predators, and we don't really have those right now. So our predators become things like the mean guy at the whatever, or somebody looks at you funny or whatever. Those are our big predators now, and we've gone beyond the need for the defense mechanisms that we have. And it's my hope that we're switching that that's changing, and we're going to be more able to find safety amongst each other. So this idea of the background being something, safe for people, for yourself to feel like you're not really having to put on a defense.
Right. But I mean, We're evolutionary creatures though. And we've had hundreds of thousands of years of saber-toothed tigers. And we've only had 5,000 years of no saber-toothed tigers. And even less of you're actually safe. You're protected by a king or a baron, or you've got a shotgun or whatever it is, as far as like physical safety goes. And,
and
just staying home for a year, that's a lot to overcome.
Definitely. Well, what I was saying too is that because we are all vulnerable to this little virus, which isn't a living thing, but just a protein coat and some RNA, this puts us all in the same situation. And so we're all equal in that regard. And I like to look at it in that sense that it has leveled the playing field, not a particular race or a particular gender or color of skin or anything, age even. Everyone's vulnerable to it. And by having that, it kind of joins us together and makes us more of a world community. So that's the takeaway that I'm hoping to get from this myself, but also hopefully for other people.
I don't want to say it's a punishment, but if we were all, as the human race, be put on time out to learn some lessons.
Oh dear.
I think this was the most, probably the best way, that's a terrible thing. That's a terrible thing for me to say. It's the best way for us to be, to have had this situation. I know. What I'm trying to say is it could have been way worse.
No, I agree with you though. I think it had to be for most people, it had to be something disastrous. And this is actually one of the benefits of trauma and of having situations where you are challenged at the core level, is that it makes you or can make you resilient. And that's the idea behind what I do in my podcast and my YouTube show, is to help people to know that there are ways that we can actually shift from this survival mode and come into a place where we can connect with ourselves and with other people.
So how can we do it? What do we do?
Well, there is a part of the neuroscience and the neurobiology that is called the social engagement system. And it's a grouping of five different things in our physiology that allows us to connect with ourselves, but also to connect with each other. And this has been laid out by Dr. Stephen Porges and his book Polyvagal Theory. This is based on his research having to do with infants and in the ICU. So these are highly traumatized infants, and they were noticing that regardless of their health and well-being, sometimes the babies would just die. And so he kind of figured this all out and concluded that there was an important component within us called the dorsal vagal. And this is just a part of the vagus nerve. And what it does is it allows us to, at our maximal capacity, like if we cannot, we don't think we're going to make it, our body will actually shut itself off. And this comes from the reptilian part of us, a very basic primal need. And it would serve a reptile well to do this, like to dive down under the water, shut down your metabolism and turn down your respiration rate really low so that you could just stay under the water and avoid the predator. But because we have such large brains that require vast amounts of oxygen, if we do that, we die. So it's not a very helpful mechanism for us as humans. And what has evolved is something called the ventral vagal, which is another component of the vagus nerve. And this ventral vagal, and it innervates our heart and our lungs, but also a lot of the guts, the liver, and so forth. But the idea of it is that it's another way, it's another pathway of dealing with the attack or the trauma, the perceived threat, by using the ventral vagal rather than shutting down completely. We now have the option of slowing down. And there are five components of this social engagement system. One of them is the ventral vagal. So we've got the ability to, if we can regulate our heart rate, if we can regulate our breathing rate, that's really super good. And those are both ventral vagal innervations. So just taking a slow, gentle breath and focusing on your heart and just bringing awareness to your heart are ways to stimulate this ventral vagal nerve. But we've also got other places in our body that speak to this part of slow down, everything's going to be okay, all is well. And they're located within our body. So we've got the ability to, when we make sound, when we vocalize, and we make pleasant sounds, this stimulates some of the nerves in the pharynx and the larynx that are part of this system. So this helps us to calm. So just like hearing a nice voice. So another place that is innervated and part of the social engagement system is in our pharynx and our larynx, which is where we make sound. And when we make sound in the range in our voice of a natural speaking range, and we make these nice, pleasant sounds, that actually sends a signal that all is well. So this is another part of the social engagement system.
Is that why when someone is humming, it feels like everything's okay?
Like I would think so, yeah.
And if you hum yourself, you feel a little bit better?
Yeah.
And could this work? Like, I remember you, Matt, I was forcing you to do the Joe Dispenza meditations,
mm-hmm.
and you said it made you feel way worse.
Right.
What happened to you? And why is that, Pamela? Can you tell Pamela what happened? So now I'm afraid to ever. Or maybe you're doing this on purpose, like how you clean the house. Air quotes, clean the house. Like, you just say, oh, it was terrible, so I don't force you to meditate like that?
No. I think it comes down to, I think the way I'm wired is just a little bit quirky. And I think certain sounds that should be soothing aren't necessarily soothing to me.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It's more about, I think, tying me to a particular place. I think that it's not a primal necessarily thing for me. I used to fly kites all the time, so hearing wind over sand feels really good to me. But crashing waves puts me to sleep.
But it was the meditation thing. I think it was sitting quietly gave you a humongous headache or
and
something.
That can definitely, again, be a thing for sure.
So being quiet may not necessarily work for some people. So the meditation thing going within may not be the best if you're experiencing a particular thing. So maybe you need to switch over to, like, what you do is you listen to hardcore heavy metal.
Well, yes.
Does that calm you?
I firmly believe that I set my mood kind of range based upon the music I select to listen to. If I listen to something fast, with something slow, I listen to something sung by a female singer, if I listen to something that's more orchestral, it certainly does set me up in different headspaces for sure.
Yeah, so that leads me to another aspect of this system is the inner ear has a very small muscle. It's the smallest muscle in our body. And this muscle is actually one of the ones that gets affected when we have a traumatizing experience. And
it brings me back to the ear? Inside the ear,
yeah.
Wow.
And this muscle moves the bones around in there to vibrate with the sound frequency. And so when we're in a trauma state, like you said, you had a hard time sort of understanding what you were hearing. And that's what this muscle is there for, is to help us to take that information, the auditory information coming in and send it off to the brain for processing. But if that muscle is not in its right coherent state, vibrating at the proper frequency, it's not going to do that. And that's part of what happens during a traumatizing experience.
So, Pamela, is it because it's trying to tune in to hear footsteps from the panther behind you?
I suppose that's a pretty good idea for why that would happen. But yeah, I don't know exactly.
It's not going to tune into your friend saying, hey, you're okay now. You're okay. A, B, C, D. And you're not hearing any of that. You're just trying to hear, is there someone, what's going to attack me?
Yeah. It could be that you're creating more of a hypervigilant state, right? So we're listening more to sounds that are farther away, or we're listening more carefully for sounds that are loud. And
we're maybe tuning out anything that's soothing because we're so focused on, okay, what is coming for me right now? I need to hear that.
Yeah, don't tell me to calm down. There's danger.
Don't look at me like that.
No, I'm not having flashbacks. Oh my God. No, but I'm wondering, is that why Matt had the experience with the meditation, the calming, quiet meditation? Because you're like nuts.
I think so. Yeah. I also have to say, Joe Dispenza, I love him and I love his intellect and his passion.
But
I don't love his voice.
Nice.
His voice to me is very strong. And there was I listen to his meditations often, and there's just this one part where he says, relax. And to me, it sounds like a command. Like, that doesn't feel comfortable to me. So I totally understand, Matt, where you're coming from.
And then if you listen to some, because I have all of his meditations, we got all of his CDs, but some of them, he starts with this other accent and it's really bizarre. So I can't concentrate anymore because I'm like, what happened? What's he channeling? He sounds like a different person.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
No, I have no idea what kind of an accent. No, never mind.
No. Yeah. Like when.
So like a New York accent, right? Isn't he from New York?
No, it's
Boston.
No, it's not that kind of accent. It's like, you know, when you see movies and someone's channeling and then something comes over and takes over their body and they turn into a different person.
Okay.
And a different voice and everything.
Oh, dear.
It's that. Yeah. And I label it accent, but I don't know what to call it. It's like, you know, it's like that when you watch movies.
Well, it could be the hypnotist in him too, because he's got a hypnotism hypnotherapy background. So when apparently there's different ways of doing it, doing hypnotherapy, but one of the ways is to speak in short phrases with, you know, with
a
pause.
Get to it already.
I gotta say, I like it when he yells at me. Because like when we were doing the workshops and he's like, and you better do this. If I see any of you yawning during meditation, I'm going to come in there and stick my finger in your mouth. I'm like, oh, shit. Okay. So it just kept me. I guess it's my martial arts background because I liked mean martial arts teachers that like really cracked the whip on you. Do you know what I mean? Like, for me, it's very martial artsy. I like it when he yells at you.
Well, so one of the ways meditation is taught is they come by with a stick and they beat you if they think you're not in the right state.
Exactly.
And how's that going to work? But
wow, well, I don't understand that at all.
I do. It makes me behave and like concentrate.
But you could look exactly the same and the guy could just literally decide to whack you.
You can always sense when someone's tuning out. Have you ever had a conversation with someone on the phone and you find yourself struggling to speak? It's because they're not listening and you can sense it. Am I the only one who experiences that?
No, I think you're right. Yeah, we're very good at sensing each other. And I think that's a big part of what we can become more able to do is to sense. By sensing ourselves, we can sense other people. But I wanted to continue, if I may, on the social engagement
yes, please.
Pieces. So, yeah, so we've got the pharynx and larynx. So speaking and then hearing the sound, comforting sound of other people's voices. We've got the heart rate and the breathing rate when they're at normal levels. This can put us into a nice calm state. And then the fifth one is head turning. And head turning comes from very early developmentally in humans. You know, we can't really move our head by ourselves at the beginning, but eventually it becomes, we're able to turn our head. And that turning our head, looking around and seeing no danger is part of this system as well. So we've got the ability, if we want to use that system to come to a place of calm, and we can help each other by using this system as well.
So can you show us, do we have time? Can you show us, like, explain to us?
Yeah.
What do you do with the turning of the head?
Okay. Well, what I would do for head turning is something I call orienting. And there's actually a lot of different things going into this. Okay. So the eyes are not part of the social engagement system, but the way that you use them can send messages of this ability to calm us. So this is, again, instead of shutting down for a trauma, we would slow down and thereby not get into this state of survival, right? So we're able to stay connected. And this is how we can help each other. But the eye movement with the head turning, if you can imagine, if you're looking at something and you want to take in the information from it, you want to investigate it, your eyes are going to be a little bit forward in your face. They're going to be a little bit sort of out. If instead you allow the information to come in to your eyes, and you can just try this yourselves. So where you're looking at, let's say the map behind you, I can see there, if you want to pick out the where the rivers are, you would be looking at it with intensity. If instead you let your eyes soften toward the back of your head and just let the information come into your eyes and receive the information, by having those soft eyes and especially the backs of the eyes, that's actually stimulating one of the nerves that is part of this system as well.
Hold on. Yeah, this is like martial arts. This is what we were taught. Soft eye, right?
Soft eyes. Right, perfect.
Matt? Well, yeah, no. So much of what Pamela is explaining to us, I feel like it's ground that's been covered, but not Western-y science-y. It's been more easterly philosophic.
Oh, and that's happening over and over and over again. You know, I keep hearing things.
Well, wisdom is wisdom, right? And if just because you can come to it and you've got a formula or you've got a really good excuse for it, that doesn't nullify someone else coming to it from, in martial arts, we study soft eyes. And that's a way of just perceiving your entire 360 degrees around you.
And so you're not focusing on the fist, but if there's another fist coming from some direction you're not aware of, you're able to see everything.
Yes. So what happens when we are in a trauma state trauma response is we get tunnel vision. We sort of have this sort of blinders, and we don't see the periphery. We don't see
much because we need to focus on what we perceive to be our number one threat.
Exactly. So if we are in a situation where we're feeling nervous, we're feeling anxious, what a nice, easy way to do that is to just sort of try to take a bigger picture with your focus and just expand your focus out to include more of the room, like actually do that, right? That can actually turn down some of our natural trauma response.
Pamela, another interjection. Is this why vacations are good? Because in a way you're doing the same thing. You're getting a different perspective, a grander view of things.
Possibly, but I think more likely would be just like taking in a view. So rather than having, you know, you're looking at your computer, your books or your kids or whatever, instead now you can look at the whole beach, or you can see a mountain scene or whatever. Seeing vistas is actually super good for our ability to calm ourselves by having that production of, and I can't remember, if I think it's serotonin gets produced when we have a vista view. But the head turning piece is a little different, because what we're doing with the head turning is we are actually engaging the muscles in the neck that are part of this system, and having the eyes go with that and take a look and say, oh, there's nothing there, there's nothing wrong, right? That's one way to do it. Another way is to separate the two. So we separate the eyes from the head. And by doing this, this is something that comes from through the Feldenkrais method, which is part of the motions that I do in my trainings and so forth. When we separate or differentiate the eye movement from the head movement, we're actually engaging more of our brain, because oftentimes when we turn our head, our eyes go with it. But instead, if we separate the two, like just keep your eyes forward, soft gaze, and then turn your head to one side. So we'll just try this little activity together. You can soften your gaze, which means just let your eyes rest sort of back in your head, as if the information coming in is just being received. Mm-hmm. And then keeping that soft gaze, let your eyes stay where they are and turn your head to one side. So we're differentiating, we're keeping the eyes there, and then you can move it back to center. And then do that to the other side and turn your head just a little bit to the other side, keeping those eyes gazing in front of you. And that is differentiating the eyes from the head, giving the brain a new perspective and not an automatic one. And this is part of what we can do here for ourselves to calm.
Is it always side to side? Can we go up and down also?
There are many different ways to differentiate, but I have in a practice that I do or training that I've learned in EFT tapping, there is eye circle. And I think this comes through the system of EMDR, which is the good for trauma, but it's good for shock trauma, not necessarily for like this kind of global trauma. Anyway, what they have you do is they have you make an eye circle, and your eyes are going in a complete circle. So your question of can we go up and down too? Yes, you can go all the way around in a full circle. And in the process of doing that, if you find that there are places where it's hard to get, like let's say we're doing this like a clock, 12, 1, 2, 3, you know, around the clock, maybe there's some hours that are difficult for you to get to. Your eyes jump across them. They make a big, there's a big gap between 4 and 6 or something, you know. When we have these things, we can actually undo some of our triggering by looking at these, where the eyes go in these circles. And we can clean out some of the old stuff that's possibly getting in the way of us being optimally well.
That happens to me a lot. There are some points where my eye, it feels like it's not smooth.
It's jumping. Right. So what we do in EFT is we would have you use acupoints, which are places on your body that are speaking to your nervous system directly. They are places that help to calm us. at the same time, if something comes up, like we have a trigger that something that was not comfortable, we might notice that we've got that bumpiness in this eye circle. We can use our nervous system, the acupoints, and the words to bring this thing clear and bring it out, bring it forward. At the same time, we're calming ourselves. So we're not empowering those thoughts anymore. We're taking the power away by using the acupoints and the nervous system to calm at the same time.
So if I'm doing this by myself and I find that my eyes are jumping at a certain point, mm-hmm. and I don't have you there with me, Pamela, what do I just try to think of what could the trigger be, like, and then try to reverse it?
Yeah, it might just come to you. Sometimes that's what happens, is when we have had something that that causes that jumpiness, there could be a particular place that you were looking at the time that the trauma happened, or, you know, that's where it came from. It's kind of not, I would say, advised to do by yourself, Fawn, but I know you like the idea of being able to just whip it out, you know, self-help right now. Let me do that right now. I get it.
Let's get it done.
See, for me, though, I mean, yes, it's good to have all the scientific kind of justifications, et cetera, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's about, I'm telling my whole self, we're going to relax. We're going to soft eye. We're going to, and it's almost like the action of doing that is not dissimilar from an addict saying, admitting they have a problem is the first step in fixing it. It's like, I'm going to enhance my calm. And on some level, I want to say, it feels like, to me personally, that's like 80% of the battle, is just understanding you're under load, you're under stress, and calming yourself down, you know, however that's going to happen.
Right.
Some people choose to calm themselves down by working their bodies to exhaustion.
Yeah.
I
wanted to actually talk to you about that, because I was just thinking about something Fawn said, which was, you know, you need somebody to sort of push you to be good or whatever, right? So this is where Joe Dispenza talks about, we have these patterns that are programmed into us, which are things that happened that we now have the receptors on our cell membranes sitting there waiting for these chemicals to come in. And so we get addicted to our own molecular chemistry that is, it's affecting our emotions. And so, yeah, we get people that, because they've been traumatized or because they've had situations that were not comfortable, feeling comfortable is not comfortable. And so, we get used to what we're used to.
Right. I've had some measure of success doing it this way in the past, and that is continually reinforced, then I'm not going to change it. And I'm going to fight you if you want me to change it. Absolutely. Yeah. I can totally see that.
Well, it's like people who are involved in really bad relationships. Yeah. They're afraid to get out because they're just, you're used to whatever you're used to. It could be a very bad thing you're used to.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and there's a physiological reason for that too. It is an actual addiction. And that's what Dr. Joe talks about too. And what the bleep do we know, and Candace Pert and all the molecules of emotion and all of that stuff. We definitely, the norm becomes what we need and what we require. And how do you get out of that? Well, if like you said, Matt, the first step is to see it. Right. To even know that there's something there. And so I think that normalizing stress is what's happened in our society, where people say, oh, I'm so busy, I'm so stressed out. Like, it's a normal thing. Mm-hmm. And I think what I would like to see change, and how we can change this. So I think if we, first of all, can learn that there's another way to do things. We don't have to stay stuck in the fear response. We don't need to stay stuck in survival. It's okay. We're all in this together, you know, the social engagement part of it. But by learning ways that we can find calm, and first and foremost, to know that calm is actually really important for ourselves, and every function in our body, all the millions of things that happen every second in our body, our cells are waiting for the information that says we're safe enough to go into homeostasis, which is our optimal wellness. And if we are not continually putting those messages of it's okay to feel okay, it's okay to be safe, safety is good, what does good feel like? These are the sensations of good. You know, all of those kinds of things will make it so that fear is not the norm, anxiety is not the norm, and our bodies will function more easily and we'll be more comfortable. So just making it clear that we have the ability to change this for ourselves and that we will function better. It's an evolution thing.
We were talking before about the opposite of love is indifference. You think it's much more than that.
Right. I think where does indifference come from? Probably mostly, I would say, underlying that would be fear. Because if we're indifferent, that means maybe that there's something in there that we don't really want to see or touch. But fear is going to keep us from being able to connect. And that's the idea that you were saying. We don't necessarily have the capacity when we're in survival mode to connect. And this is neurological, that our function says, the first function is it safe? Question. That's a question. Is it safe? If the answer is no, then there's nothing more to say.
Right.
You're stuck there. And so everything you do is about survival. And so how can we help? And that's what I was saying, is I think the more we talk about this, the more that we know that, oh gosh, you know, this is not healthy. Our bodies aren't healthy because of it. And that, okay, so here's a new piece of science, which I find fascinating. We have these little cells in our brain called microglial cells, and they have been, their reputation is as helpers. They're there to clean out the dead neurons, and which are the brain cells that carry information. These little microglial cells are running around or sending their tendrils around and checking on all the neurons and, you know, kind of taking care of everybody, and makes really good sense. And they're also, their other job is to take away neurons that are no longer needed. Well, recently, and this is in the last year, scientists have discovered, they've been studying these cells a long time, they've discovered that they can get stuck in the on position and they can start pruning away or killing neurons that are healthy. And why are they doing this is because we're stuck in a stress response. So I wrote an article about this actually called Stress Destroys Our Brain, which is a pretty extreme title, but it's basically what's happening. So when we see this huge increase in the amount of depression, anxiety, and mental illness, that's brain stuff, and an increase in dementia, Alzheimer's, early onset, and all of those things, these numbers are just increasing like crazy. We have to look at why is our brain sort of being destroyed? And it's because these little microglial cells get stuck and in the on position, and they just start killing the cells. And the correlation between the microglial cells and the immune system, the immune response, is that microglial cells are actually part of our immune system. And so what they're doing is they're trying to keep us safe. They're getting rid of the neurons that were part of the pathway of the stress. And so when we've got this stimulated, it can be kind of like an autoimmune situation where instead of it just destroying our own healthy tissue or healthy cells, it's destroying healthy brain cells and causing mental illness and dementia.
I'm really scared
now. In an attempt to protect us, though. So
exactly.
I could see, so if I chose, which is a very tricky thing and air quoted, mm-hmm. but if I chose to put myself in a high stress situation and live there, Mm-hmm. At some point, these cells just could come in and just start eating away at all the bad things that have happened. So it's on some level, welcome to Fawn-Friendly Movies, on some level, your brain, you have to switch that off.
Yeah.
In order to, quote unquote, stay healthy. Otherwise, you're going to go off into your own tangent world where your brain can still function and live, but it's not going to necessarily be in a healthy place inside of a society of people. So because we live literally now in this information, in this beautiful information age where we can find out about anything. So, you know, if I go literally the quote, if you go looking for heaven, you'll find heaven. If you go looking for hell, you'll find hell. So if all of a sudden I'm interested in finding out about, you know, hard right groups, and I want to find out about the history of racism in America, and I want to find out about, you know, everything I can possibly conceive of that's negative and going to stress me out, I can do that. Mm-hmm. And at some point my brain is going to say, well, it's time to let's erect a shield and let's just turn off reality for you, or, you know, this reality you're seeking out.
Exactly. Yeah. So I see your eyes, Fawn, and I see.
No. Her eyes will bug out.
Frightened you.
Because, you know, what we do, you know, my wife can't stand, we call them Fawn-Friendly Movies, romantic comedy style movies are what she watches, because she can't bear to deal with, you know, death on screen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right. And yet, you know, we all spend a lot of time understanding and really focusing on a lot of negative stuff in the world. Welcome to the news cycle, and or welcome to your Facebook feed, et cetera, et cetera. It seems like those things where we focus because it's a predator, you know, it has that same fight flight response. We need to focus on this now because this is, I'm going to tunnel up to it.
And
what you're talking about is, okay. Welcome to the 21st century, Matt. Let's try and embrace some calm. Let's try and get away from this hyper full-time 100% stress-filled situation, and let's take a moment and hear some exercises. Whereas I'm saying we need to focus on the calm, absolutely, and we need to realize that there's a problem, and you're not saying anything different. It's just the execution, I think, of how you would do it versus how I would do it.
Well, the idea that we have sort of the default mode network in our brain, which is the normal mind-wandering, mindless, not really conscious awareness of just being, that if that's more frequent, that's kind of indicating that there's a stressor. So if we can get out of the default mode and into focus, which is great, you know, when you're doing martial arts or when you're doing mindfulness practices, meditation's hard for people, but I like to include motions because you're doing something and it feels like it's not just sitting there being still, right? You're actually involving your body and allowing the nervous system to respond to that. So we're getting into focus mode and we're calming at the same time. So I guess the reason why I tell you about the, you know, the microglial cells is not to frighten, but more to illuminate what is actually going on, so that there's a more pointed direction away from these things, these stressors, and to know that we have the capability of doing that. So can we do a little motion right now? Because I feel it might be helpful.
I feel very, very scared because I have years of accumulated stuff.
It's all right. It's all reversible. It's all reversible. And it can happen in moments. Yes. So this can happen in moments.
Could you repeat that again for me?
It's all reversible.
Can you tell her it's going to be okay?
It's going to be okay.
Oh, man, she is good at that. I really believe it.
It's true. It's true.
One more time, Pamela. One more time.
Yes, it's going to be okay. It really is.
Thank you.
It really is. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm ready. I'm ready, everybody. Yeah. Come on, everybody. Let's
do it. So this is a very simple one. I call it the sigh of relief. And all you need to do is this. We're going to take a small breath in through the nose and then a larger breath. And then on the exhale, lips together. That's it.
Man, right? it's like I'm going to eat a pie. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, it is. So what we've done there is we have taken the all of the pieces of the social engagement system, put them together, well, not all of them, but a lot of them, and put them together into one motion. And by doing that, you're telling yourself everything's okay. Right
is this
now,
why we...
in this moment. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm just tripping out. Is this why we overeat? Because that reminds me of like when I stress out and I eat something, I'm like, So in a way, is that what we're doing?
Well, you know, our tongue is innervated in such a way that it's part of this social engagement system, so that when we swallow things, we're stimulating the pharynx, right? That is helpful, right? And then also how our mouth is, and these are early reflexes, early like baby stuff, right? Like the rooting reflex and all of that. When we touch the inside of our mouth with our tongue, and when we touch our teeth together, there's all kinds of happy brain chemicals that are being made. So yeah, definitely food and yummy sounds, those kinds of things. We're talking to those parts of our nervous system that need to hear, you know, is everything okay? So certainly that would be a calming thing for most people to eat.
Right. Just almost from an evolutionary perspective, there's a reason why we say, there's a reason why cultures around the world smile when they're happy.
Mm-hmm.
People
mm-hmm.
laugh. This is one of those universal things. And when we see a smile or we hear a laugh, we relax a little.
Exactly.
Could that explain why I inappropriately laugh in the worst situations?
No, you're just wacky.
Yeah, there's a nervousness that, you know, when we feel nervous, sometimes it's like this feeling of like, if I laugh, maybe I'll calm myself, but also other people around me. I think so. Yeah,
like a long definitely. Time ago, my grandmother died, and for hours, I was laughing uncontrollably, like not on purpose. Mm-hmm. Like everything all of a sudden was really funny. Oh. And at the same time it was happening, I'm like, am I crazy? What's happening? But it was making me feel better.
Well,
that's how you're handling it, for sure.
It's your brain's way of probably helping you deal, right? As she said. Just looping back just really quickly into that world of soft eyes for a minute. You know, the way I went through, you know, my ridiculous first world trauma. No big deal, right? Looking back, it's like, please. But at the time, of course, you feel like your life is over. You know,
every trauma is important to each individual.
And that's the point. And for me, I took a look. I compartmentalized my life because that's what I do. But I compartmentalized my life and I said, wow, that sucks. That sucks. That sucks. And that's literally, I identified five portions of my life, and I decided only two of them were decent. And I made the executive decision to say, you know, those other three parts of my life, shine them. We're going to try as hard as we can not to focus any energy there. And we're going to focus on all the things that are good in my life right now. And that's the only thing. Those are the only things we're going to quote unquote focus on. So it was literally the eyes got soft and then the eyes got focused. And I kept building on these good things, and I slowly edged out into the other kind of portions, these other compartments of my life to help sort me out.
Yeah.
And that took a while, but you know, ultimately I'm the man I am today because of it.
Yeah.
But
that's
again,
the thing. That's what our goal is, I think, is to grow, right? You guys said that at the beginning. Our goal is to grow and evolve. And if we can look at these situations that are difficult as our opportunities to do that, now they've become actually a positive. So our traumas can become things that are good. Ultimately,
the reveal
of the good may not happen immediately, but perhaps there was something fond when your grandmother died that made you giggle, and there was some good there. I don't know. But, you know, when we can find the good and link it up with something that's not so good, we've got this.
Thank you.
Ugh. Yeah.
So let's see. What else? Did we cover everything for today?
Well, I think one of the things I wanted to bring up was an interesting phrase that you used early on when you were talking about the trauma, and you said, I was beside myself. And it's an interesting choice of phrase, but it also explains a lot of what does happen when we go into this. I was talking about the dorsal vagal, which is a shutdown, complete shutdown. It's a collapse. The muscles get soft. We ball up, and it's like we're done. And when we're stuck there, we can tend to be dissociative. And by that, I mean, like you said, somebody's tuning out when you're talking on the phone with them or whatever. That's dissociation. Dissociation is a tool that we have employed to keep us safe, because we don't really want to be there if it's a really bad situation, right? So this feeling of being beside myself is an interesting terminology, which indicates to me that at that moment, it was helpful for you to be next to you, not in you, but over there. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. And I'm not sure if I'm hearing you right, but it also made me, like, just you repeating that, that term beside myself, I had nobody else but myself. So I had my own self as my buddy beside myself. I had someone on my side. I had myself on my side.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I think that's a really good first step is to know that we're on our own team, right? Like, I'm here for me. And so we do need some selfishness. We do need to have some narcissism in order to know, like, the difference between me and you. I think there was somebody funny that said, you know, our ego is there so that we know where to put the fork, you know, when we're eating. We don't put it into someone else's mouth.
Nice.
So we need a little bit of that narcissism to keep us so that we are here for us, right? Like myself.
Absolutely. I also think of it as if someone is falling off of a cliff and you want to help them, you have to have a grasp on something you're anchored to be able to pull someone else off of that cliff. If they're hanging off and you're there to pull them back up, if you're not anchored, you're both going to go down.
For sure.
Right?
Great analogy. Yeah.
Right. But again, I want to say typically for me, it's making sure I'm not as emotionally connected to whatever is pulling this person down. So I can keep a level head, so I can offer some calming advice, and I can do all of those things. If I'm in an emotional distress and you're in emotional distress, we're not going to dig ourselves out. We're going to live there for a minute.
Right.
But when I'm advising a friend who I'm in, you know, they're going through whatever it is they're going through and they're very emotionally connected to it and I'm not, I can offer good advice.
But here's the problem is, like, you and I as a team, even if you and I are both experiencing trauma at the same time, one will always suck it up to help the situation get better, and we'll switch back and forth, like we'll take shifts. But what do we do? What do we do when we're both so crazy? What do we do when we're both in major trauma mode?
I'm not
talking about you and I. Hopefully that will never happen, because we've had enough to deal with. We're knocking on wood. But I'm talking about society.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think we are here to grow and evolve. And one of those places of growth is happening right now. It's staring us in the face, and we have a choice. We have a choice of, are we going to go back to what we did as normal, quote unquote normal, or are we going to come into a place where we are taking care of each other? We actually are looking out for each other, and in easy ways. And so it's not a burden to be with somebody who's having troubles. It's actually very comforting, and it feels good to feel that you're being supported and supportive of others.
And isn't that interesting how that's happened this year? I mean, Pamela, you and I became friends. You became friends with KJ also, and we all do different kinds of work out there in the world, but we're all doing our podcasts, and we're all really there to help each other, our fellow man, right? And I think this year that's expanded. There are so many, like, we're all now being pushed into the limelight, if you will, you know, out there to be heard by all these countries at the same time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I think too, one of the things I used to say, gosh, you know, I help people with trauma, but I haven't had a lot of my own and felt a little bit
knock
like,
on wood.
Know,
I'm knocking on wood.
Bonky Bora, right? Knock the table.
Bonky Bora, Bonky Bora.
Well, it's perspective really is what it is. But what I realize is that I came out of whatever traumas I've had that I've had with the feeling of, yay, thank you. I'm so glad I had that because it brought me to this next place. And so, yeah, finding the good is really the key to all of this, because there's a lot of stuff that we could look at and focus on that's negative.
Right.
But by finding the positive and whenever we can. But if we are in a situation where we are capable of feeling and loving and caring and giving and sharing, it's our responsibility, I feel, to share that with other people. Because they need to hear it. They need to know. You can come out of this. You will be better than you were before. You may not see the good right now, but it's there for you.
It's going to be okay. I always relate it to food. I will make food no matter what. I will share it with people.
Yeah.
And even if you're like, I'm not hungry, I'm like, yes, you are. Have a bite. Eat something.
Chihuahua.
No, do
you well, with
I
our
mean?
Kids, it's definitely a key thing.
But I'm using food as a metaphor, though. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes people are like, I don't need any help. You know, I don't want to talk to you. Or
well, yeah, you're like that all the time.
That's because you shut down completely and get quiet, and it's terrifying, man.
I just get quiet. I'm just thinking. It's spinning. I mean, for me,
it's very scary.
We're just going through cavortations all the time, right? We got some challenging news at work the 2 days before Christmas. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Right.
And what did people have to say about me when we were on our little team calls discussing what's going on? You're so happy, Matt. You're such an optimist, Matt. You're such a... Because... Mm-hmm. You know, again, you go looking for heaven, you're going to find it. You're going to go looking for hell, you're going to find it. It's just where you are. And when things aren't set, nothing is set in stone. When things are set in stone, then yes, then that's the time. Hopefully you've planned before then. But, you know, if things are negative and they're absolutely negative, that's the time to focus on what you're going to do about it. Mm-hmm. The time to focus on what you're going to do about it is not... Well, this thing could happen, or that thing could happen, or too many variables. No thanks.
Yes, that's true. I also think, though, that we can kind of prepare ourselves for disasters by creating this sense of knowing how I can come back to that sense of calm, that feeling of calm, and the feeling of the expansiveness of that.
Yeah, I can.
The more
I can
we
see
practice that. When we're not in danger, the stronger that pathway, the easier that pathway becomes. So this is neuroplasticity that I'm talking about.
I'm making my ugly face right now. I'm sorry. It's just like, I don't want to focus on bad stuff because, you know, in this world where I'm the center of the universe, because I am. I'm sorry, Pamela. I am the center of the universe, or at least my universe. And it's about keeping things that are good close to me and keeping things that are bad for me far away from me and focusing or thinking about like bad things. It feels like I draw them in and I don't want
to
do
that. Yeah, no, I wasn't saying to focus on bad things. I maybe wasn't making myself clear. I'm saying focus on the good.
Well, you're saying focus on maybe the feeling after the bad has happened, but then I've still got the bad in my head.
Right. So what I mean to say is if we can notice the feeling of, okay, let's say we bring up a memory of something that was not so good. We can notice there's a feeling that comes along with that. If we can shift that to something that's actually a positive feeling rather than a negative one, in the sensory part of us, and we can change that, we can shift that. Now we've associated that bad thing with something that actually feels good. So that would be the reason for bringing something to mind, would be to allow yourself to know, oh, see, I did come out of that and I feel okay. And it's all right right now. So it's just this practice. It's kind of a, you know, working a muscle
right.
that the more we can say, I go into trauma response, I come out of trauma response, I go in, I come out, okay, and I'm okay.
Right? Yeah, no, I can see that. But in the moment where you're actually having trauma, now is not the time to be thinking about previous traumas. Now is the time to be focused on feeling the good. I totally get it. In the same way that something I learned in college was, you know, it was a common theme. It happened over and over again. I would sit down in my class at the first day of school, you know, first day of the quarter, and they would describe, okay, you are going to, from scratch, design and build a human being. Or it wasn't like that, but it was, it always felt that way. It always felt like, here is the insurmountable task, and in 10 weeks, you'll be doing it. And the first couple times that happened, I totally went into fright mode. I mean, are you nuts? I'm stupid. I can't figure that out. Yeah. And then you look back from the high place when all is said and done and you've actually done it. And it's that then in my head, from a technical point of view, this isn't necessarily from a personal, like emotional point of view, but from this very hyperlogical point of view, when I run into a problem at work, I know I'm going to solve it. I know how that's going to feel. And so I greet it with excitement. I welcome it. And it's like, cool, this means I'm going to learn something new, something positive. I'm going to grow my skill set. Awesome. And you're saying, welcome to be more holistic, Matt. Just do it with everything. Come on.
Yeah.
Make it happen.
Right. And then, like you said, to be able to reflect on something that was successful that felt daunting at the beginning is you're making serotonin that supports the new learning. And dopamine, whenever you learn something new. So again, you're supporting yourself with all these happy brain chemicals. Yeah. Yeah, super good. But curiosity isn't something that is available if you're in survival mode.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah, it's not available. Curiosity is like, nope. That's next level stuff.
I don't know how to do any of that. I gotta be honest. I need another person. And for me, it's using bad words. And you know, like there's one of my favorite humans is Cat Williams.
Mm.
And having someone who you're not even really knowing in your own personal life, like someone out there, like a great comedian like Cat Williams, for me, is for someone to briefly touch on the same kind of stress you're experiencing and say, God damn. And for someone to say, God damn, it's like, whoa, okay, I'm not the only one feeling this way.
Yeah.
It releases stress for me. I don't know if I'm able to do it on my own when I'm experiencing trauma, but if a friend says something and has an explicit like language about it to emphasize the absurdity of something, that helps me. It helps to remove me from the trauma.
Right. Yeah. And then I would also argue super soft fawn as opposed to sailor mouth fawn. When you watch a movie where bad stuff happens, you cry. Again, you're processing and you're working. I think you're working through
That's another
emotional
issue.
Stuff, though.
I'm not. Oh, Pamela, I can't. Mm-hmm. So we call them fawn-friendly movies. If I see anyone where the story revolves around anyone dying or there's any kind of trauma or violence, if it's not martial arts related, it'll take me weeks to shake off something I saw in a 10-second period of time.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit because I remember you saying that before, that it's a really difficult thing for you to see others suffering. And I get that. And I think that's a big part of what is perhaps what you're looking at as we come out of the pandemic and as we go into our new way of being together, that there's a bit of, you know, concern that, well, gosh, everybody's suffering. And so there's a lot of sadness that you might be feeling around that. I wanted to bring up something that has to do with the Buddhism teachings that I have learned from, through Rick Hansen, Dr. Rick Hansen, who's a psychotherapist and also a Buddhist meditator. So he's brought these two things together. He's got a few different books, one of them being called Hardwiring Happiness, another one being called Resilient, and then his most recent Neurodharma, And he's such a giving person. He has a meditation group every Wednesday night that people can attend, anyone can attend. And they do a little meditation, and then he also gives a little lecture about the interplay between the Buddhist teachings and neuroscience. So it's pretty spectacular combination of things. But he talks about something that was called the two darts, or the second dart. The first dart being the suffering. And when we see suffering, we feel it. We're built that way. We're empathic, and we're all empathic. It's just a matter of degree and whether or not we're in survival mode or not. And when we have experienced or seen someone experience the suffering, that's the first dart. Now, the second dart is how we respond to that first dart. So there is a dart, definitely there's suffering. How do we then respond to that? If we respond negatively and we're crying and we're so upset and we're angry and we're fighting and so forth, that's a second dart. So we haven't changed the situation. We haven't made it any better. In fact, we've made it worse, and we've made it worse for ourselves. And this is what our, I wouldn't say that we're designed for that, because what we're designed for is to be empathic and sort of help and support if we can. But going into that place of, ugh, now I'm depressed, and now I'm sad, and now I'm, you know, want to fight or whatever, it's not supportive. And so I think if we can say compassion is a really beautiful emotion, because we feel the suffering, we know that there's suffering, and at the same time, we can feel love. And so I would invite you to see if there was a way that you could change that perspective of, yeah, that bad thing is happening, but I'm okay. And that's okay that I'm okay. To allow yourself to be okay when someone else isn't a bad thing, and there shouldn't be any guilt around it. It's actually going to support them. It's like what you said, if somebody's falling off the cliff, you anchor yourself. It's the same thing. There's a lot of suffering, yes, but I don't need to be the second dart. I don't need to put that second dart into my body. And so instead I can say, I'm really sorry that that happened to you or for you or through you, but I'm okay. And that's good. And that is okay. And I can still have my strength and my power and my love, because that's all we can do really, I think, is to help other people, is to be that strength. And that comes from that feeling, that embodied feeling of expansion and warmth and what people call love.
Pamela Stokes, I love you so much.
Aw, thank you.
I am so grateful for everything you are telling us right now. I feel changed. And I want to share with my friends too out there. You know, Pamela and I were on the phone. Was it a couple of weeks ago, Pamela? And you worked on me for 3 minutes. I was like, you know, Pamela, I have this trauma. And, you know, like, I've been to so many therapists and psychologists, and my thing every time I go into an office is, look here, I don't want to talk about this problem over and over for 5 years and blame parents or anything like that. This is it. Let's fix it right now. I don't want to keep harping on it. Mm-hmm. And so I was telling you this. And then, so in 3 minutes, you took this heavy trauma that I had, and I felt a total physical shift. I felt a salve. Like someone had put some cooling peppermint numbing thing in different parts of my body when you were working on me in 3 minutes. Yeah. And I have felt free ever since.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that, Fawn.
And makes just listening really to you now, I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
Right, Matt?
Well, I think if we go into the world of quantum physics, we will see that we're all connected, right? We'll see that we're all just energy, whether or not it's coherent, resonating, or whatever, it's energy. And so when there's something that's in there that's causing an emotion that's difficult, it's actually just energy. And our fear of feeling it is worse than the actual emotion most times. And so if we allow ourselves to sit quietly with it and imagine, and I think I asked you, do you like puppies or kittens? And I think you said puppies. And so just imagine that you're holding a small little animal very gently, And really what we're doing is we're just bringing awareness to that place that is not comfortable. And by being there with it and sitting quietly with it and sending it this expansiveness, this feeling of love, it changes it. It says, okay, well, I don't have to be here anymore. You know, it's not unsafe for me. And so the emotion can pass, the energy can move through us, and we can actually come out on the other side of it feeling, like you said, you feel settled.
Pamela, that's can beautiful. We have a regular outing with you, a regular get together with us on our show?
Sure, anytime.
I want to continue this and talk about different things. Yeah. And would you be willing to share with us on the next show a 3-minute technique like you did on me? So
I think so. What's challenging about that is it's individualized, obviously, for every person. Some people are in more of a trauma response, and so there could be some question of whether or not they should do it. But, you know, maybe by just saying at the beginning, like, you know, taking your own responsibility here, and whatever happens, you know, this is yours, and we're just going to offer this to you. So something like that, a little disclaimer.
Maybe we can ask our friends to write into us and just send, find out what the common theme is for people that they want to work on. And then we'll have one thing we can concentrate on.
I think
on.
We could do that. Yeah, that would be great. Basically it's like this. If something comes up, I like to think of our triggers as our opportunities. Because if we're triggered, that means there's something there that was there from before, and it is now being motivated to come back into play. And because we are wired this way, we can actually shift that. And so now instead, that trigger can now lose its power, and we can come to this place of like, oh, that doesn't even bother me anymore when I think about it. Not that I don't think about it, but if I do, it doesn't bother me.
Right.
And how beautiful that is. So it could be that, you know, we work with some people on the air and have them just identify something small.
So do you hear that, friends? Please write into us and tell us what's on your mind. And let's do the next show with Pamela Stokes.
Sounds good.
So let's wind it down for today. And all right. I just want to remind everyone to please go to moveintoresilience.com. That's Pamela's website. And your podcast also. Everything you're talking about with us, you do on your on your podcast. Would you like to take the lead and tell our friends about all the different ways they can reach you? And also, Pamela, can you let us know what's in store? In store? What's the word? In store or in store?
In store.
Mm-hmm. What's in store for your future things? What are you working on?
Well, thank you so much for asking. Right now I have a course that's available for people. It's called Less Stress, More Comfort. Just very clear name that includes dozens of different motions, I like to call them. These are different techniques that use the nervous system to turn off the fight, flight, freeze, and shut down responses so that we can come into an easy state of calm. So that's a course that I have offering right now. And the previous trainees of mine that have learned some of the techniques that I have asked me to write a book with them. And so we're writing a book, and this will be available probably within a year, I'd say, that includes a lot of the different motions that people can do for themselves. And also if they happen to be a therapist, they can bring them into their clients. So that's the goal of that book. I'll be running a training, so I'll be teaching people some of the things that I do, and that I'm putting a cohort together, hopefully at the beginning of this coming year. And what else? Oh, yes, I want to bring a program to elementary schools. And so I'm starting to write, I've already written 7 different little songs that have to do with the motions themselves. And my son, who's an excellent musician, is going to be making the music for them. So these are kind of, it reminds me of maybe Schoolhouse Rock, where we learned, you know, how to, what a conjunction is or what a bill is or the preamble to the Constitution. These are just little cartoons that happened. And so my idea is that these would be little songs that people could learn that would help them to be able to do these motions.
I love it. I see a Grammy in your feature.
Hey-o.
You know, why
Grammy
not?
Grammy is for music, right?
Yes.
Grammy. Yeah.
Yeah. So thanks for asking. I am, yeah, super excited about sharing what I know and letting people know that they can take care of themselves and there are ways that they can do that. And it's not a weakness to reach out for help. That's another thing, too. I think when we think about receiving support, some people have a hard time with that. And one of the things I like Dr. Rick Hansen said was, our greatest self-sufficiency, our indication of self-sufficiency is receiving help from others.
Right.
And so this is, I'm not asking you to do this alone.
Yeah. Right. And that's what we're talking about is we're friends and you can lean on us. We can lean on each other and help each other and we become stronger together.
Yeah. And by giving like that is neurologically speaking, it helps us to know that we're safe is when we can give.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like back to the caveman days too. You're in it together and you build fires together and you protect and make a beautiful home together. That's what friendship is all about.
Yeah. Indeed.
Okay. Indeed. So, and also your podcast, Pamela, Move Into Resilience.
Yes.
Everybody check her out. She's the real deal.
It's also a YouTube channel. I made the videos at the same time that I did the audio. So
nice.
So you can actually see me doing the things and we can do them together. So it's interactive. That's what I like about my podcast is I ask you to do stuff while you're there.
I love it. Thank you so much for everything
you've
shared with us.
And thank you.
We look forward to having tea with you again at our kitchen table on the next episode.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pamela. Thank you, friends. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I will have everything Pamela talked about in our show notes. Check that out. Go to www.ourfriendlyworld.com. Please leave us a review, guys. Please. How did I lose a review the other day?
I don't know.
I went down one. Anyway, please leave us a review. And thanks, everybody. Talk to you in a few days.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.